Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th day of August, Anno Domini 2021. My, how fast this year has flown. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da!
Apple has announced plans to scan iPhones for images of child abuse, raising immediate concerns regarding user privacy and surveillance with that move. Apple says its system is automated, doesn't scan the actual images themselves, uses some form of hash system to identify known instances of child sexual abuse materials, CSAM, child sexual abuse materials, and says it has some fail-safes in place to protect privacy. Privacy advocates warn that now it has created such a system, Apple is on a rocky road to an inexorable extension of on-device content scanning and reporting that could and likely will be abused by some nations. There are three main elements to the system, which lurk inside iOS 15, iPadOS 15, and macOS Monterey when they ship later this year. Apple's system scans all images stored in iCloud Photos to see whether they match the CSAM database held by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. When an image is stored on iCloud Photos, a matching process takes place. In the event an account crosses a threshold of multiple instances of known CSAM content, Apple is alerted. If alerted, the data are manually reviewed. Yes, humans look at your photos. The account is disabled, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC, I guess, is informed. The system isn't perfect, however. The company says there's less than 1 in a trillion chance of incorrectly flagging an account. Apple has more than 1 billion users, so that means there's better than 1 in 1,000 chance of someone being incorrectly identified every single year. Users who feel they have been mistakenly flagged can appeal. And there's a part two to this. There's three parts, actually. Part two, Apple system uses an on-device machine learning to scan images and message sent or received by minors for sexually explicit material, warning parents if such an image is identified. Apple says it does not get access to the images which are scanned on the device. They are using your battery and your power and everything else.
Cell service.
Yeah. The third part consists of updates to Siri and Search. Apple says these will now provide parents and children expanded information and help if they encounter unsafe situations. Siri and Search will also intervene when people make what are deemed to be CSAM-related search queries. Anybody who uses Siri to search for porn,
they almost deserve what they're going to get?
Yeah.
Most of us agree that children should be protected. I certainly do. Now, Apple must stand against any mission creep on the part of such governments. That's the biggest problem, given that Apple, when pushed, will always follow the laws of governments in the nation it does business with, no matter what those laws are.
Well, they have appealed a few times.
A few times.
Yeah.
No matter how well-intentioned, Apple is rolling out mass surveillance to the entire world with this, warned noted privacy advocate Edward Snowden. If they can scan for CSAM today, they can scan for anything tomorrow. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple plans to scan U.S. iPhones. Your choices are whatever Apple does is okay by me. I'm a bit uncomfortable with this. Starting down the slippery slope. Nope. Bye-bye, Apple. Never had it, never will. And, of course, other. So far, we've got 21 votes, and never had it, never will is way ahead. Starting down the slippery slope is next. I'm a bit uncomfortable with this. Has 2 votes, and nope, bye-bye, Apple is 1 vote. And, of course, if you have more to say about this, or you just said other, Head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the polls. The forums, rather. The second forum down is the poll discussion. First item currently, at least, under the poll discussion is 7 August 21, Apple plans to scan U.S. iPhones. And, of course, if you'd like to talk more about this live, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And sort of the annoying thing is, from the Apple community, is that Facebook and Google are already doing this, and nobody seemed to care when that was announced.
Mm-hmm.
But now Apple's doing it.
Facebook and Google are out there somewhere. iPhones are on, you know, it's on your phone. It's right there in your device.
Well, your Android phone is doing it.
I know that, yeah. but
they don't think of it that way.
They don't think of it that
way.
We don't
idolize Apple the way you guys, Android the way you guys
idolize
Apple.
Worship it to the nth degree.
Exactly. So when they do something like this, it bothers people. And I get that. I mean, I do get that.
But you're right, though, in protecting kids and that, I can see that. I stand behind that 120%.
Oh, absolutely.
And if anyone is using iCloud to store their illegal pictures, again, they deserve what they're going to get.
Oh, yeah. There's no question to that. I mean, that's, you know, how big an idiot are you actually?
Yeah.
You know, I get that.
They're out there. I mean, yep. I remember, I'm sure Steve Shop has had it. I can recall at least five different computers I had to turn in.
Yeah.
Because of child porn.
We had to do that at RIT a number of times as well.
Well, I had one stupid person, and that's the only way you can describe them is stupid, is when they bring it in and say, "Don't look at my photos."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The minute
the minute you
utter that, now I was obligated.
By law.
By law. Then people say, well, why? Just because he said that? No. Because if that machine came in with porn, child porn on it, and I let it go out after being warned, because he said, don't look at it, and, you know, I don't quick check to make sure that they're, you know, they're on, nothing is on there. And it goes out with child porn on it. Now I'm just as guilty as him, and they're going to come after me and sue my shop.
Right. And to be absolutely clear, I'm sure that 99 times out of 100, they just meant he had pictures of his wife or whatever.
And that's fine. Adult porn can go. Right.
Although from the days of film, we hear stories stories all the time about the 1 hour developer. Places where they couldn't develop your film. Well, they couldn't print the film they just developed because of the naughty bits.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But one of the things that is slightly misunderstood is that the Apple scans your photos on your phone when you update them to iCloud. So if you turn off iCloud photos, then it won't be scanning.
But now it will. According to this report, they will also scan on your phone.
Well, when they're uploaded to iCloud photos, but they're doing it on your phone so that they don't see your photos at their end. So it's happening in your phone, but it's iCloud photos. Which story did you have? The TechCrunch one or the...
I don't remember. But it also says part two, on-device machine learning to scan images and message.
Right, because messages get uploaded to the cloud also.
Right.
So part of this is cover their butt. So that if someone gets caught with child porn, nobody sues Apple.
Same thing that Dave just went through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely get that. Why am I not getting YouTube? But, yeah, it's I get it. That I absolutely 100% think anybody who engages in child porn should have horrible things happen to them. And I'm willing to help.
Oh, I'd step right in and be right behind them. And
not a problem with a rusty grapefruit spoon. I'm there. But the problem, as it says in this thing, is now we're on that slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Once they have that technology, there is nothing that prevents them from using it elsewhere. And in particular, when you're talking about a company like Apple, who very, very often does whatever other countries where they operate want them to do. You know, who watches the watchers?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a real issue, and it's going to be a real problem. As time goes on, I have to be honest. It would bother me. It would very much bother me.
Well, I'd be standing over them as they're beating the heck out of them and getting cuts. I'd stand there with lemons and just squeeze the lemons right on into the cuts. I'm not doing anything harmful. I'm just adding to it.
Yep. No, I put them in that much more pain. Absolutely agree with that. But
so Google and Facebook wait until your photos get to the cloud before they scan them.
Yes. And what Apple is doing different is they're going right to your machine.
And during the upload to the cloud, it scans it before it uploads it.
It says here that they do it on your phone.
Yes, as they're being uploaded to the cloud.
Maybe.
And if it finds an issue, it doesn't say that. It says every one of them says iCloud Photos. All the articles I'm seeing are saying iCloud Photos.
Yeah, this one did not. But it's certainly possible. But this implies that even if you turn off iCloud Photos, iMessage stuff, is that what it's called, iMessage? I don't care.
Right.
Messages
are being sent to the cloud.
Through the cloud.
Yeah.
They're not being stored in the cloud.
Yes, they are. Well, another setting. Yeah, you can have your messages stored on the cloud, too.
Right. But this doesn't seem to imply that that is going to happen, that you don't have to store them there. Just the fact that you send a picture through message, it will get scanned.
I'm expecting a letter of clarification to be posted by Apple soon.
I suspect so, but it does say Apple themselves said they are using on-device machine learning to scan images. So it's happening on the device.
They're all big about doing everything on your device, so they don't get your data first.
Right. But, again, you know, what they get coerced to doing is going to be a good issue. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Skip. From West Henrietta, New York. Hi, Skip, what's up?
Hello there. I called last week and talked to you about losing my Gmail, and I tried to go through your security tango and had all kinds of problems doing that, things that you didn't warn me that were going to happen and things didn't work and whatever. But whatever I did get done didn't find anything. If you want a report of what I did, I can tell you that. But my main question is... what do I do now in terms of the suggestion was that I might have a bad Chrome, but I couldn't get Firefox started, and that was a pain in the tush for hours.
Sounds like you have a lot more wrong with your computer, because Firefox should be download, install, and run.
Well, I downloaded it and went to install it, and it says, we can't finish. And then it kept reminding me, you're not finished, you're not finished, you're not finished.
There's something else wrong with
your
computer.
Yeah, you got something else in that machine, and I would highly suggest taking it into a shop for them to look it over.
Yeah, as I remember, it's a Windows 7 machine.
Yeah, well, the first suggestion was I just kill Chrome and reload Chrome and see what that fixes. And that's my main question for today.
Well, honestly, if you're having those kinds of issues already...
Yeah.
Killing the only browser you have that seems to be working at all.
Internet Explorer and Edge should be preloaded into...
Yeah, Internet Explorer is here. Yeah. I just tried running it. It does run. So I should be able to reload. My only question, is there anything in Chrome that I have to save separately? Passwords or
your
contacts and everything like that?
Well, if you have turned on...
Google syncing,
then no. Have not, then you want to at least, at the very least, save your bookmarks.
Okay, I'm not sure how bookmarks, what those are, or how to save them, but...
Syncing would automatically do that for you.
It would sync everything to your Google account, so then on any browser, any Chrome browser on any computer, you would see all of your bookmarks, all your contacts, all of your passwords.
What do I look for, or how do I do a sync? How do I start that?
In the upper right corner of the Chrome page is an account icon. If you're not logged into your Google account, then it's probably just a blank picture of a silhouette of a person, and you can click on that and sign into your Google account. If you need to make a Google account, it will let you do that.
Okay. looking at my desktop here, and I'm not seeing...
Not on your desktop, in Chrome.
Oh, in Chrome.
Yeah.
Okay. So sync in there.
So in Chrome, across the top is the little location bar where you type in, like, soundbites.org.
Yeah. Yep.
Way off on the right are three vertical dots.
Okay, three vertical dots. Okay, good enough. I know
before
where
that
at.
Is the person icon where you turn on your... You log into your account and sync.
Right.
Okay. I think I'm logged in already here, but anyway. Okay, that's my main question here. Like I said, your Security Tangle, I wish it had a few more things in there.
Well, Windows 7...
Well, no, I'm not saying like RKill. I went to RKill, and it wanted to load this and that, WinZip, backup WinZip.
Yeah, you just say no to all of that.
And everything else, and I did, well, I... Did some of them didn't because it doesn't say what to say no to or what to say yes to, but I never did get to RKill. Yeah, you know, it just didn't get there. And then Unhide worked, Defender rootkit. I think I ran that. Stinger I never found. I ran my Bitdefender and that didn't find anything. Super Anti-Spyware didn't find anything. Malware. I ran malware that didn't find anything, but I couldn't find anti-malware or the adware. I couldn't find that.
Our guess is that there's something wrong with Windows. And it may not be an actual malware infection.
Right. Okay. I'm clicking on all of these things, and all of them are showing up for me.
Yeah, well, I just didn't see them in the searching. Okay, well, Windows...
So when you clicked on them, you didn't go to those pages?
I went to these things and ran what I could find and run.
That isn't what I asked you. On the Security Tangle page, on step two, where it says download all unnecessary files, when you go to something like Super Anti-Spyware, you can see it's blue and underlined. So if you just click on it, it takes you right to the download page.
That might be how I got there, but I did run it. Okay, was this Win Update, this Internet Explorer tools update, I should run that too?
That's not one of the things that I have on here.
But it was suggested by somebody that if you're saying Windows is mucked up.
Well,
okay.
Windows 7 hasn't had legitimate updates in a long time.
Well, I get some updates. And,
no, you don't.
You get updates to programs. You do not get updates to Windows anymore.
Right.
Occasionally I've seen something that says it's a Win 7 update.
Yeah. Nope.
And then it's lying, and that could be where your problem came from.
Yep. Windows has it on any updates. Like Nick said, the programs that are you've installed on your Windows might get updates, but the Windows operating system itself has not been updated, nor will it.
Okay. Well, didn't they release that SMB patch?
They have released one or two things, yeah. Absolutely.
But that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking I've seen. I don't know. I've seen something. Not much. I know most of it is definitely gone. I thought there was a few things they still let through.
Not really. They really are discouraging your use of Windows 7.
Yeah, well, I still like it better than 10.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just telling you that you're hanging out in the wind.
No, and a lot of programs are not supporting Windows 7 anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
That could be part of the issue you're running into with the Security Tango programs. They just may not support Windows 7 anymore.
Yeah, and I may have an oddball Chrome. I may have an oddball Windows. I may have oddball who knows what.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and energy. And then maybe I will get hold of Steve Ray.
Perfect.
Yep.
As long as you do something other than Mac in your store.
Yep.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And the last Windows 7 update came out in April 2016.
Yeah. We had one of the people in the YouTube video saying maybe you should install Linux now. Yeah, but we're not going to get into that with him. He clearly loves Windows 7, has absolutely no desire to move on. And you know, there comes a point where you just go, okay, we can only help you so far. That's just the way it is. I get it. You know, you're comfortable with something. You're used to something. You don't like change. I absolutely get it.
And for 99% of the features, Windows 10 looks just like Windows 7, especially if you turn off all the tablet modes. If you leave it in desktop mode, it looks just the same.
Pretty much. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Wayne. What's up?
Well, I have a different kind of question this time around.
Okay.
This has to do with C language, and what it is, I'm trying to utilize one of two libraries. One is called CryptLib, and the other is called LibGCrypt. And I've tried compiling them, and of course it doesn't like to compile because there's no main function. What do I need to know in order to make this stuff work?
And you're doing this with C?
C on Linux, yes.
Right. C or C++?
Regular C. There's also a C++ library, too. It's a crypto++.
Right. I'm looking at the CryptLib manual right now. There should be a section on installation somewhere. Features, installation for embedded Linux. We don't want embedded Linux.
Are you getting an error message of any kind?
The only one I get is when I go to compile it. It says you need a main function, and there's no main in it.
Did you download the right version of the library for your exact version of Linux?
I think that I have.
That is the first thing to check. Hold on, we got to take a break, but don't go away. We'll come back to you in just a minute or two. Going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Wayne from Irondequoit, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
There's supposed to be another liner that...
Yeah, it didn't. At 35 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. Oh, I'm just going to send this. I'm sorry there's no... subject.
That's all right.
We are on the phone with Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. Wayne.
Yes.
Okay, here's the deal. There are two manuals. No, excuse me. There is a manual for CryptLib, and on page 21, it tells you how to unzip the code and run the make file. And when you did that, you got an error message?
Yes. It said that when I went to compile it, it did not have a main function. It's not happy.
I don't know if you had a bad download or something. I don't know. As far as the other one is concerned, Steve is posting a link on how to build it from sources using GCC.
Okay.
And that one should work. I'm afraid we're not C experts.
That's okay.
I have not programmed in C in a very long time.
We looked at C in college as a future language that might be used someday.
Yeah. I stopped with PL1 because that's what Kodak used at the
now
time.
C isn't used much anymore, is it? It's all C++.
Yeah,
and C++.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've used it. I've written programs in it. Nothing I would share with any other human being.
It should be pretty similar to C++, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it should. In terms of things like this, where you're compiling using the GCC compiler and all of that, you should be able to do that. But for both of them, they're fairly specific instructions. Steve is posting the link to the web page for GCrypt, and the manual that comes with the download for CryptLib on page 21 gives you how to do it for Linux. But other than that, I don't really have any other information. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. I do appreciate your help, though.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck.
Let us know how you make out.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, that's yeah. We are sorry. We don't.
Archandra in the YouTube chat is saying he's compiling it, not making it. Is the words he's using, and main would be a required function for a program. If he's building a library, it wouldn't need a function called main.
Right, because you're not compiling. No, he's absolutely right. You're not compiling a program. You're compiling a library. And there are instructions on how to do that as well. But I'm just following the. I'm just talking about the instructions that are in there for both of those. He should. I don't know. You know, if either of those instruction sets are wrong, that's one thing. But I don't know.
Or if he did get a bad download and there's an unexpected EOF or something weird happening in the text file.
Right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'm attending a funeral next week. I'm attending a funeral next week.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Okay. What I'd like to do is take the pictures that I've got on my tower computer and put them out on the cloud somewhere. I've never done that. And then take my Chromebook down to Philadelphia, and then I could look at the pictures on a relatively good-sized screen.
Right.
And, how do you go about this? I've never done it. You know.
Okay, you have a Chromebook, so you have a Google email address, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And a Google Photos library.
Right, and that gives you Google Photos for free. So on your Chromebook or on your desktop, it doesn't matter which, you can log into Google, and then let's say you go to just google.com, right? So you're you're going to search.
Yep. Okay.
In the upper right-hand corner, if you have logged in, you will see a circle with your picture or whatever picture you've put as part of your account. And if you look next to that, you'll see three rows of three dots, a little nine-dot
cube,
kind of tic-tac-toe cube, yeah.
Okay, hold on a second, Nick. Now, when I go to Google, I just go to Google Mail.
Okay, you can do it from Gmail as well.
Yeah, Mail is just one of the dozens of features that Google gives you with your Google account.
Yeah, you're just opening up another tab in Chrome that's just a blank one that you could do a search, and Nick's saying up in the upper corners where he sees that.
Similarly, if you are on Gmail, again, in the far upper right, you'll see your picture.
Okay,
and next to that little nine-dot cube.
Right, right.
If you
go to account?
No. Click on the nine-dot cube. You'll see Drive and Gmail and all kinds of stuff. If you scroll down, you will see Photos.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see it.
You can also go to photos.google.com.
You just go to photos.google.com. But this works as well. Now, once you're there, you should, if you've never put a photo there, you'll just see a blank screen. All you then have to do is open up the window with all your pictures in it, select
a
bunch.
I'd make an album first.
Yeah. I'll get there.
Okay.
And then you can just drag them into that window. Better would be to put them in an album.
Okay.
And the way you do that is when you get to that blank screen on Google Photos, if you look over on the left, you'll see albums. And when you click on that, one of your choices will be create an album.
Okay.
You give it a name.
For whatever one you want to show folks.
Right. Such and so's photos or whatever. And then you, again, just once you've created that name, you now have a blank screen with that name near the top. And then you just drag all your pictures into that. And it may take a while, depending on your internet connection, to upload them.
How big the photos are.
Right. Once they are there, you will still have them on your desktop. You have not removed them, but you will have them available to you in Google Photos. So you could then take your Chromebook to the funeral or to the place where the funeral is and show those pictures to anybody. You can also directly share them from Google Photos. So if you have, for example, put them in an album, I did this just this week. My wife's cousins all gathered in Buffalo. I created an album. And then up top, you'll see a little share icon. It's like a sideways V. And from there, you can type in the email addresses of anybody you want to share it with, and they will get a share link.
And Google Photos has an automatic slideshow feature where it will play a slideshow of those photos for you. That's in the page.
So, you can just have it set on a counter, start the slideshow, and folks, as they're passing by, can just pause and watch the photos as they go by. You don't have to be there, moderating it.
And I've posted a link to how to create a Google Photo slideshow as well.
Perfect. And, by the way, if you really are hot for this, one of the things that Google lets you do is create a physical photo album. Obviously, you pay for that.
Yeah, you can print a photo book.
A photo book.
Yeah. One of the limitations there is you only get 15 gigs of cloud space for free, but that's tens of thousands of photos.
Yeah. You're not going to – I don't know how many photos you have of this person, but it's pretty unlikely that you're going to fill 15 gigs worth.
Well, no, this is my grandchildren. And
so, okay, you could.
Well, some of these people I haven't seen in 50 years. I mean, I went to high school with them. You know?
Still, it's gonna. You're going to be able to put a heck of a lot of pictures out there.
Yeah.
No, maybe even a metric boatload.
This thing's pretty neat.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I see the triangle thing, and then, okay.
One other thing, though, when you were first going over and scrolling down to in finding the photo thing, if you click on it and drag it up, it'll move it up to the top of the screen. In that little box, you can rearrange those. So whenever you click on that, cube, photos can be right up there near the top.
Okay. Yeah, I get you. So it's a little easier to use.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Thanks. Have fun. Yeah, it is amazing how truly powerful Google Photos is free.
And how many photo sharing sites have gone out of business because of it, yeah. So I think SmugMug is still around. Flickr got bought by somebody, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I don't know who.
Yeah. I think it was the Verizon. I mean, look.
Maybe, but the other thing is you can do editing of photos, right online if you want to.
Oh, SmugMug bought Flickr. So the two photo sharing sites are buying each other.
Yeah, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
Well, just in kind of a continuation of something that I called about a month ago, I was having trouble with my setting up mobile hotspot with my phone to connect to the laptop. So I went down to Verizon and talked to them, and they mentioned something about a Verizon Jetpack. MiFi? M-I-F-I?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically a cell phone without a phone.
Right.
It's just the cellular data connection.
So my question to you is, would that get a better connection or give better, first of all, the Wi-Fi, but to connect, I don't even know the right terminology.
It basically is its own hotspot. So if you have a cell phone without a hotspot feature, you would use the MiFi to create a hotspot.
Okay, so I guess maybe I'll say this real simply. I tried Wi-Fi hotspot. I tried the cell phone hotspot, and it wasn't working very well. Is it likely this Jetpack in the same location would work better?
Nope.
No. It's probably your location.
You need
because
a bigger...
there are dead spots, and I don't care if you have that Jetpack or the phone, the latest and greatest phone. If you're in a dead zone and you're not getting any bars, whereas if you go down the street, two blocks, all of a sudden the bars start jumping up. That happens.
The only thing that would help would likely be a bigger cellular antenna.
There, two things might help. One is the MiFi boxes are pretty new. So if you've got a very old phone that, say, for example, only does 3G or 2G.
Yeah, I've got a Google Pixel 3A, like I think
you have. Oh, no, you should. You, no, yeah, then you're really not going to be, you're not going to be any better. A MiFi is just another cell phone. So whatever quality of connection you're getting with your real cell phone, you would get with a MiFi.
Are you trying to get an internet connection in your house, or is this for when you're on the road?
When I am visiting a relative.
Oh.
Now, I can use the phone fine, but, you know, watching Netflix on a cell phone doesn't, you know, isn't...
Yeah, it's not going to be any better. I'm sorry, it's just not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that Verizon and...
The connection works. I could watch Netflix on that, but it's just the screen's too small. That's why I thought the hotspot. But the hotspot, is it possible that your phone connects well, but it doesn't perform well as a hotspot?
It depends on the hotspot plan you have. It might be limited to the speed that it allows.
Theoretically...
And you're paying by the gig, probably, too.
Well, right, unless you have unlimited data.
Yeah.
Costing you a lot of money. The Verizon made a deal with the United States government. The government gave them a bunch of spectra for Wi-Fi. But it was originally public spectra. So they said, if you use this, then anyone who uses this should be allowed for free to put up a hotspot. So many phones these days will, in fact, allow you to do a hotspot. The quality of what the government didn't do was mandate the quality of that signal. So it is certainly possible that you will get a better signal from the MiFi than you would from the phone, because it is not impossible that Verizon is in some way limiting the signal to the phone, although I do not necessarily know that. However, I wouldn't necessarily say that that's going to happen. So you may well not get any better connection with the phone, with the MiFi, than you do with the phone.
Check the return policy and sharing plans if you want to try it.
Steve hit on it, what I was just thinking. Because, you know, sometimes it takes me a while for what I hear to actually download into my brain. Yeah. And I think I heard the guy say, well, you know, you have a 30-day return policy. So I would know in, like, the 2 hours it takes me to get there, charge it up, I would know in 12 hours whether I liked it or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if I can bring it back the next day or 20 days later, then that might simply reduce this discussion from theoretical to what happens in this particular location.
Yep.
Because I tried to get T-Mobile has advertised. So we do a... Wi-Fi, and you don't even have to be a customer. So I called them up and I said, well, here's a zip code where I want to get the Wi-Fi service. And he said, well, I said, do you have service there? He said, I don't know. I said, well, how am I supposed to find out? He says, you go online and do it. And I thought, well, what if I do? I thought about this after I talked to him. I said, what if I don't have...
I'm calling you to see how to get online, and you're telling me to go online first.
Yeah, right.
So
You hang up and call again, you get a different guy.
I should have done that. I just explained to him something, some feedback I think was helpful. I said, do you have any idea how dumb this makes you sound that I call you, and you can't tell me if you provide service at a particular location?
Also, okay, good customer service says really the guy gets online himself and then tells you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here's one more.
Or passes it on to his supervisor who can know.
He said, you can do it online. I said, well, can you do it? Because when I worked in online banking, I would do that.
Sure, of course.
I had my own account, and I would look in. And just to let you know how the world's changed, same place, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You can't have your own account and look up to tell the people, okay, click here, and here. Anyway, I just said, you sound really dumb, and I hung up. But Steve's right. Maybe I should have just called back and got somebody else. But either way, I think that we're going to – I'll call you guys back in a week or so and let you know how this Verizon Jetpack – because all the reviews are positive. But, you know,
it all depends on how good your signal is.
Yep. Yeah. My sister-in-law lives in an area in northern Arizona, which has absolutely nothing but cellular service. and she has a MiFi or Jet, whatever they call it this week, and she uses it for everything, and it works great.
Okay.
Yeah. One of
but she has good signal.
Yeah. There's one of the problems could be that, you know, there's a hill between your friend's house and the cell tower.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting a cell antenna on top of, you know, a flagpole or up top of the house might raise the antenna enough to get a better signal.
We're talking about a urban area where it's all flat and it's, you know, very developed. And
so there could be a building between you and the tower.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, anyway, my experience will tell when I use it. If I can have it for a month, I will use it in a couple different locations for a week. If I don't like it, it's coming back.
So there you go. That's how it works.
Thank you, guys. And I will report back and let you know how it turned out.
Please.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Take care, guys.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Our store in Victor, the Four Corners of Mendon, where 64 and 251 cross, there's like a dead spot for several companies. So for like half a mile in each direction, when you go into that Four Corners, you lose your cell, and you go out of the Four Corners, you gain it back again.
Heck, I do that in my house.
Yeah.
If I'm up in the what we call the computer room, and I get a phone call, I have to quick say, hold on a moment, and I have to walk out into the kitchen. Because in that room, there is so much chicken wire in the walls that nothing's coming
and
out.
On the verge, you know, on the edge of a cellular reception area, most of the cell phone companies have what's called a microcell, sometimes called a femtocell, which is basically your own cell tower you put in your house. And it either will pick up the cellular signal or usually it plugs into your internet service and then you can get cell calls over the internet.
Back at RIT, way back in the day, we used to enjoy going up on the second floor of the Saunders building and looking out over the atrium and seeing all these people with iPhones crowding into one far corner of the atrium because that was the only place that had a signal.
Good signal.
One day I was coming down the elevator with one of my minions and we were in the elevator and my phone rang and he just looked at me and said a word I cannot repeat on the air. Because he couldn't get cell signal anywhere in the building except that corner. And I was because he was an AT&T customer, because that's really all you could get iPhones on at that time.
At the early days, yeah.
And Verizon had actually put a tower on the building next door. So even in the elevator, I was getting, you know, 3 bars in the elevator.
He didn't like you on
that. He was very unhappy about that. So I made it a point from that on whenever I was in this thing with him to make a call.
How to influence people and make friends.
Exactly. Exactly. But the fact is, clearly, as time goes on, internet connectivity becomes less and less a luxury and more a necessity. And there are 1,000 different ways that people are attempting to get hooked up. The balloon thing that Google did for a while. There's
Loon.
There's the satellite thing that's going on now, Starlink. There's the MiFi stuff that the mobile hotspots that pretty much all of them do in one form or another. The problem is that connectivity is spotty. Because, you know, money. You get a return on your investment when you put that stuff in a city. You don't get it when you put it in the country.
One other thing that it's attributing to that I noticed because driving all over the city all day long, you know, it's great that this 5G is here, you know, and you're, you know, going to have it so much faster and everything else. But the other thing that it's attributing to is all these darn towers now that have to be put up. Everywhere as you turn around, they're erecting these 5G towers because it's all sight, line of sight.
And 5G is such a short throw, they have to put up a million towers.
Yeah, and you drive around the city now, and it's just polluted with all these towers that they've got to put up.
And I read that some FCC regulation requires each company to have their own towers. So you can't build one tower, split the cost.
Like
and
you
then,
can with four.
And share that, yeah.
For three, yeah. And you say it's line of sight, but it's not. It's hundreds of feet is all.
I believe it because, like I say, I drive around all day and I'm seeing, you know, I mean, they're putting them up on churches or this building and that building, and there are these big towers with, you know, they're adding on top of these buildings or building the towers with these massive 5G receivers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And transmitters, and it's, talk about eye pollution.
Yeah, and that's, of course, you're seeing some serious issues with throw, with distance, and it's going to cost a whole lot more to have 5G because it's going to cost them a whole lot more to put up that many towers.
Well, that's why right now Verizon, you know, they're sitting there, free phone, but they don't tell you the extra cost that it's going to be to be on the 5G.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is over, but despair not, oh, Soundbites listener, because there is a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, a whole nother hour of Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. So take a little break for yourself. Go get a cup of your favorite beverage. Do a little self-maintenance. Or as I call it, a bio break. And then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. And as I said, you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful, because with your support, we are member supported, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 11 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Yes, yes, I know it's a shock to you, but this is Soundbites. I'm member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I'm very good. I don't know if you were listening at all, but that was one smoking jam you guys just played.
Isn't it nice? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Said that was BD Lenz, Dave? Who was that song that just played? BD Lenz, was it?
No.
No?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, clearly. What's up, Mark?
I wanted to say that gentleman that's still running, you talked to him very early in the hour before, about running Windows 7, because he doesn't like 10. I think he should maybe upgrade and find a system like Stardock or something to make it look like 7.
Classic menus will do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, something like that. Yeah, that'll work too. And that way he's got more security and less problems, and it's going to be 90% there.
Well, the other, but wait a minute, Mark. The other issue, though, is it's easy to sit there and say, you know, all right, go to Windows 10. Depending on how old his machine is, it might not handle Windows 10. So we can't blanket say, oh, go to Windows 10. Because depending on the amount of RAM, how old the machine is, and, you know, what he's trying to run, there's a lot of variables.
And in addition, if you bought a lot of programs for Windows 7, they may not have equivalents in Windows 10, or you may no longer have the installation media.
Yep.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think he's at a huge, huge security risk at this point.
Well, yeah, he knows it. He knows it.
You know, and if he was, say, to upgrade, even if he was getting a new computer, I would tell him to do 10 because the compatibility mode, 10 Pro, the compatibility mode and the ability to do other things that you can't do in the home version is well worth the price of the operating system.
But again, you know, it depends on each person's circumstances.
Yep.
Yeah.
We can't assume that.
I agree with you. You can make 10 look very much like 7, and you have a lot fewer problems with 10 than with 7.
I do it all the time. I've got a 10 machine, and I run classic menus, and it looks like Windows 7.
Right. And on top of it, it gets you most of the way there. There are a few things that are different, but it gets you most of the way there. And I just feel the problems he's having are deeply rooted in 7, not just working anymore for him.
Yeah, sadly, the answer increasingly for Windows 7 users is, I'm sorry, we can't help you. I hate to say it, but it is the way it is.
And now they're going to 11 at the end of the year, and most of our computers that are a few years older than, say, 2017, aren't even going to have the chip in it to be able to run it.
Didn't the lawsuit already start against Microsoft for Windows 11 won't run on my Windows 10 computer I bought today?
Yes. Many of them, buy it today, it's not going to run.
You know, I think even letting you run it without the chip is less of a security risk than if you're running 7.
I completely agree.
That's what I feel, but that's just my 2 cents.
No, it's good. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
One more thing I wanted to tell you, if you have time. I was watching a tech show on YouTube, and they brought up a point that I thought was so interesting. They said at least 90 to 95% of us that are running, like, Windows, I don't know too much about Mac, we're not even running the proper ICC profile for our monitors.
That's very true for a lot of people.
And I would think that number is pretty low. 90%? No, it's got to be higher than that.
Yeah.
And I found the proper one for morning. Night and day.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. If you, go ahead.
It was running. It was running SRGB.
Yeah.
And which is the common one. Very narrow color gambit.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. It really makes my monitor look like it should.
Yeah. The ICC is the International Color Consortium profile. Every monitor. The International Color Consortium are the people who put out the standards for what color space is and what colors, blah, blah, blah. And they have profiles for monitors. And most people are not running the correct profile for their monitor. I had that on a beautiful 28-inch, gorgeous monitor that I had. And I thought it was running pretty well. And then I thought, well, let me see. I put the correct ICC profile in it, and it was night and day.
Yep.
I mean, did you see how the blacks look?
Sorry?
The blacks?
Yeah.
When I was in Windows 10, I always thought the background, say when you're in Explorer or when you're in this PC, I always thought it was a very kind of a medium to dark gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's really almost black.
Yeah, yeah.
So
all right.
I was very shocked. So, but anyways, don't throw away those discs that come with your monitor. It should be on there. They don't update those ICCs very often, if at all.
Right.
Once they're made.
Yep.
So,
and if not, you should be able to download them from the manufacturer's website.
The monitor manufacturer.
Right, yep. Right.
Yeah.
I got mine from LG.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, good point, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you.
The same thing is true of your television, too, especially if you're watching movies, that if the colors aren't exactly right on the movie, on your TV, the movie doesn't look good. And so, you know, real big audio and video files will have a color calibrator for their television. Apple just introduced something in the latest TV OS where it will use the camera in your phone to see what your television is putting out of your Apple TV and automatically adjust the Apple TV to send the colors so that the television shows the right color.
Nice.
So it doesn't actually calibrate your television. It changes the Apple TV to make it look right on your
On your phone.
On your off-calibrated television. It uses the cameras in the phone to see what colors are coming out.
That's what I'm saying. It makes it look right to the phone, which may not be looking right to you, but it's certainly probably possible.
Well, it makes it look right based on the calibration in the Apple TV. So it uses the lookup tables with the TV supposed to be using. And it's a lot cheaper than getting an external calibrator to calibrate your television.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I tuned in a bit late, so you may have dealt with this in the news earlier. I'm thinking of getting a Mac, either MacBook Air or MacBook, regular MacBook. But I heard over the weekend, or maybe it was last week, someone was reporting that the newest the displays on those are showing some problems with black dots or black stripes occurring in some of them. Have you heard about this?
I did read briefly read a tech note where they are addressing it. Let me see if I can find that again. Right now, from what I remember, there's a software fix to adjust the video drivers. Did you have that as a news item?
So it is a software issue, not a hardware issue with the actual monitor itself.
Right.
Okay, right. That sounds like it could be fixable then, okay.
And for the most part, the computer you buy would have at least a one-year warranty, or you could do the three-year AppleCare. So even if it does have a problem, it's free to get it fixed. But you really don't want to have a problem to begin with.
Right. Okay. I'll keep checking on it then. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
And we're expecting replacements to the high-end Macs to come out any day now.
Yeah, yeah.
We're a little bitter. Any day now. The replacements for the low-end Macs have all come out. It's weird. The low-end Macs and the high-end iPads have been updated. Now we're waiting for the high-end Macs and the low-end iPads.
Right. Before we go on, let us remind everyone that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be hosting the Soundbites Lounge, soundbites.org/lounge, if you want to join us. We'll talk computers and other stuff. And I just got the message just now about that.
Right? I got it before you.
Yes, you did.
So you're going to talk about on there when you're going to get your four?
No.
Why?
My four what? For you mean my 400?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was saying that it's a thing that's going to happen at some point.
I'd like to get one, but I don't have the room for the keyboard.
It's on nothing but a keyboard.
I know, but if you saw my ham shack,
yeah,
I already have one laptop and then two other keyboards already sitting there with six different monitors.
Yeah.
Because I've got, of course, the laptop. That's got its monitor. And then I've got four displays and then another TV beside it so I can watch TV upstairs. So. Let's say start building.
Well, I have a very nice space right next to my keyboard that is completely empty because that's where the cat sleeps. And if I put anything there, she knocks it off when she jumps up. And if I'm not in the room, of course,
that would be nice though.
So I put nothing there, like
a TV on the wall.
Yeah,
and then be able to run the cord to the 400, and then from wherever you are, you sit there because you get pretty long cables.
Yep.
And be able to program it from there. That would be sweet.
All right, let's talk about Windows 365.
Nah. Ooh.
Microsoft this week launched its Windows 365 service, revealing prices for the virtual desktop desktops that range between $20 and $162 per user per month.
Why would you pay... No, I'm just saying for the average person.
No, it's not for the average person. It's designed
for
businesses.
What I'm saying, yeah. For the average person, though, that's just going to use word processing and everything else.
It's not for them. They are specifically not offering it for homes. They are offering it strictly for businesses and large enterprises.
And it's good for budgeting purposes.
In July, back when they announced this desktop as a service, pitching it as an alternative to traditional local hardware-oriented computing that would provide cloud PCs to companies of every size, the operating system, as well as applications from Office Suite to corporate customers. And by the way, $20 a month is for the operating system, not for Office. This stuff.
And that's if you're already running Windows 10 on your PC.
Right. It's more if you're not.
Yeah.
The Microsoft Azure network of server farms is where it's going to run. It would stream a virtual machine operation to any device that can run a web browser. Windows 365 is basically a simplified and more automatically scalable version of what was called Windows Virtual Desktop until June, when it changed its name to Azure Virtual Desktop, and now, of course, it's Windows 365. But that service originally required significant experience in deploying. It was priced like most cloud computing based on resources expended, such as your bandwidth, how much data you use back and forth, how much storage, how many processors. Windows 365 is a flat rate service, but again, you do pay more for more processors and more storage. Once the user is selected, the desired virtual PC cost is fixed on a per month basis, which is what businesses love. It's going to cost me this much every month, I can budget. That's how Microsoft described it in July and how it posted the prices on Monday. Taking from its other 365 product playbooks, Microsoft sections Windows 365 plans into two general categories, business and enterprise. There is as yet no education or consumer-specific plans. It is simply possible that they're just financially unsupportable. There may never be a consumer or education version of this software. It's easy to do a knee-jerk calculation and conclude that Windows 365 prices are out of whack when compared to, say, the physical price of a PC with a similar configuration. But there's more to the total cost of PC ownership than just the hardware. Notably, deployment, physical hardware repair, or warranty. And, of course, companies will be looking at how many techs they can fire once Microsoft is handling everything. So how do you feel about Windows 365? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, you take even like a school. Most of the schools are all going to Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to put up your own server, hard drives are dirt cheap nowadays. You can get SSD, terabyte hard drives, and put those, you know, in an array or whatever, run it through Chrome, and you've already got built-in word processing, spreadsheet, you know, anything that you'd want from an Office package for the typical school person.
Right.
And you're golden. And you're saving all that money. And aggravation, like we've said before with Chrome, you don't worry about spyware, malware. Oh, you get the kids done with that school year, they just wipe the tablets and boom, they can take their tablet on to the next year and start that whole curriculum again for, say, from fifth grade to sixth grade. And it's not a lot of IT management. So yes, they can cut people there. They cut the cost of paying that monthly fee. Don't have to worry about viruses. Well,
I'm sure Microsoft took that into account, and that's why they're not going after the education or home markets. This is strictly for businesses from probably small, but certainly medium to large. And the idea being that $20 a month per person is a significant savings for a large organization. They can get rid of a whole lot of tech. I hate to say it. I was a tech person for a significant portion of my life, but they can get rid of a lot of tech support. They can get rid of a lot of fixing things. So there will be.
I don't think so because out of human nature, people will still screw things up.
Then you get them a Chromebook, and if they screw it up, you throw it away.
You get them another one,
and you can. There's already a version for an iPad, so you can give somebody a $200 iPad and let them run it in the cloud because. You don't need processing power in that iPad. You only need a network connection because all the processing power takes place up in the cloud.
Oh, no, I'm not disagreeing with it there, but people, being human nature as they are, will mess things up.
But that's level one help desk, not level three tech support.
Yeah. But you're still going to need bodies around.
But very few of them and
lower paid. Yeah, it'll cut back.
Yeah, so
they do have an expansion program called the Microsoft Home Use. so that if you have employees working from home,
right.
you get a 30% discount on their home license
right.
versus your company license.
But right. see, that's so the other bucks. Thing. I know yeah. of a couple companies that have gone to Chromebooks, and because everything is free there, you know, as far as the word processing and everything else, it's saving that company, you know, these smaller companies money, because right now they're just starting to get back on their feet after 2020 was a disaster. Yep. They can't go out and buy these new and faster and better machines. So they're looking to cut costs, not to have a flat cost. And by going to Chrome and just running, you know, the stuff that's already built into Chrome, that's literally saving them thousands of dollars.
I absolutely agree with you. Nobody's arguing with you.
Oh, well, no,
what
no,
I'm saying
I know.
Is for those large businesses that absolutely must run Windows because they think they must run Windows,
yeah.
This will be a way for them to continue to do that at a lower cost. And as to whether or not that'll work well, certainly depends a lot on how the Azure system continues to run and connectivity and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see. This is a grand experiment on Microsoft's part. It'll be interesting to see how well it continues to perform. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And I remember the, 9th of September?
Yeah. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And don't forget to join us tomorrow at 9 p.m., soundbites.org/lounge, and we'll be doing video chatting. Google fired dozens of employees for abusing internal tools to access user data, according to internal company documents. In some cases, according to the report, some Google employees spied on other employees using the tools, which would violate Google's policies. Notice there are apparently no policies for not spying on users. Okay, never mind.
Yeah,
the company fired 36 employees last year, most of whom were fired for improperly handling confidential information, like sharing it with people outside the company. The company fired 18 people in 2018, 26 in 2019, and then, like we said, 36 last year for security-related reasons. A Google spokesrobot said, "We tightly restrict employee access through a number of industry-leading safeguards, including limiting access to user data to necessary individuals, requiring a justification to access such data, multi-stage review before access is granted to sensitive data, and monitoring for access anomalies and violations." The spokesrobot also said that the reported incidents concern inappropriate access to or misuse of proprietary and sensitive Google corporate information or IP. The news comes after a new book found Facebook employees similarly abused their access to user data. Facebook fired 52 people between 2014 and August 2015 for accessing user data for personal reasons. One engineer used his access to Facebook user data to track a woman he was traveling with from their hotel room after they had a fight. Other tech companies had experienced similar instances of their employees exploiting user data. Snapchat employees abused their access to data several years ago to spy on people using internal tools. Motherboard reported that in 2019. Is no one safe? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
But their claim is that no data, personal data got out?
No, they admit it. People sold it to other companies.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, one, how much and what type of data?
Yeah.
There have already been TV plots where the people that have to screen all the videos that get uploaded for bad things, they burn out really quick watching all those horrible videos.
That's not a plot. That's real.
That's real life.
From real life. And so there's always the one guy in the corner that likes it too much. He's the guilty one.
The deal is with particularly things like YouTube.
PTSD.
There are people who... It's their job to look at the questionable stuff. And some of it is horrific. Some of it is horrific. And people are finding that they can't do it 8 hours a day, and they certainly can't do it 5 days a week, and they absolutely can't do it 365 days a year. And people burn out real, real quick. That's not fiction. That's reality. And it's a problem that is hard to solve. And that's why companies like our earlier thing, companies are like Apple is automating that as much as they can, so that they can avoid having people constantly have to look at that.
There was The Verge found a memo from YouTube that required employees to sign a statement that they know their job can cause PTSD, and so they can't sue YouTube over it.
Right.
That came out last December. Wow. Yeah, we know this job is horrible. You're going to do it anyway, and you can't sue us for it.
Right. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon. Question for those of you who have green light working. I'm in Henrietta, and they've advised me that they are building in this area, and I should be able to sign up for it in about 6 months. In fact, I've already pre-ordered. But... they seem to be a little confused about some details of their service. I know their support operation is just cranking up, so that's probably why. But if you have the dynamic IP address service, does anybody listening know whether you're getting a NATed or a public IP?
You're getting a public IP, but it is behind a NAT. So you cannot run your own server, which I found out the hard way because I ran a VPN server in my house, unless you subscribe to their static IP service.
Okay, so...
Even by using something like DynDNS, which allows you to dynamically change your IP, didn't work. I couldn't get my VPN through their public NAT.
Right.
So I'm going to need their static service.
Which I think is only $10 extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So still, you're getting 500 megabit up and down now, symmetric, for $60 a month.
That was my second question. They're telling me it's 500 down, 50 up.
Nope, they changed it.
They just announced that they're going symmetric.
Within the past day or two?
A couple of days, yeah.
Yeah, past week. Within the past week, they just sent out an email.
10th anniversary.
Yeah, 10th anniversary, and they announced that now your upload and download are the same.
But even
congratulations to Mark Murphy, 10 years.
That's great, But even 50 great. Up is amazing for what the other services are giving you.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
But I was wondering about those details, because I do not want any firewalling ahead of me. So I'm going to need the static.
Yep.
Right.
But it's well worth it, for $500.
Most people don't need to run their own server, so it's not. Yep.
Yeah, so if you go to greenlightnetworks.com/residential-2, you will see the pricing, and you will see that it is, in fact, currently at this moment, symmetrical, 500 up and down, 750 up and down, 1 gig up and down, 2 gigs up and down.
Yeah, that's what I thought I had remembered it being.
Yeah.
But then when I did the pre-order, it says 500/50.
Yep, they changed.
Mm. Well...
I think they had done it temporarily through the COVID crisis, and then recently announced they're going to keep that.
Right.
They probably realize it doesn't cost us anymore anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, because most people won't use that kind of
upgrade. Yeah, because, everybody's, for the most part, I'd say probably over 90% are worried about the download, not the upload.
Yep.
Right.
In fact, I forgot that Greenlight had so much faster uploads when I switched to it. So the first time I'm uploading the podcast and it finished in 2 seconds, and it's, wait, something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
That's a 100 meg file. It usually takes a minute to upload. What's going on? Oh, yeah, I got 500 up now.
I had a phone conversation with an old friend yesterday. She wanted to know about this Greenlight because she has the opportunity to get it, except it's $5 more than she's currently paying. I said, well, what's your current? Because she's paying $45 now. Yeah.
For how much?
I asked her. She said, well, about 200 meg. I said, okay, it's going to cost you $5 more than twice the speed. Oh, okay.
Easy sell.
And there was just a news story that they're expanding into 50 more neighborhoods.
Yep.
Yeah, that must be one of the ones I'm in, because they call it where I am, the Henrietta Elaine District.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, is you got to know what district you're in.
Right.
It's and most of it is based on old survey maps from when the areas were first surveyed 200 years ago.
Well, no, you can actually see it on their...
Their map, they have the names now, yeah.
It's hard to find the right one. They got a couple of them, and it's hard to find the right one.
Yep.
But they do have a map which lays out their districts.
Right.
But anyways, they sent me an email. Hey, we're building in your area. Do you want to pre-order? Yes, please.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah. Most people, and I'm hypocritical because I have...
You've had it so long.
Yeah, but most people don't really need more than the $50 a month. I completely
admit that. I have no need for anything. $50 a month would be 25 less than I'm paying Time Warner.
Right.
Or whatever they're calling themselves this week.
Right. Most businesses can get away with the gig, but certainly, for a medium to large size business, the binge, which is the $200 a month for 2 gig up and down, that's ludicrously cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, considering the number of people and the amount of stuff you can get. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to get their static service, though, because I don't want anything ahead of my machine.
No, I get that. Most people do not need that. But, yes, a lot of the people who listen to sound bites are people who would want that. Absolutely. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah.
One problem I did have is when I initially signed up for Greenlight and paid the penny a couple of years ago to get on the list, I used a different credit card. And now that my bill came, they went to that credit card instead of the one I wanted to use now.
Yeah, I get my I'm on the auto pay.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it's not a bill. It's just
an
email
notice, right? I get an email that says, "This is what you'll be paying," and it puts it there, and it says, "Pay nothing at this time." And I like to see that.
Well,
I like to see pay nothing at this time.
The one thing I had that was a little weird is, I got that statement, and your bill is due on the 25th, and then the 26th, you're past due because you haven't processed my payment from yesterday yet.
Yeah. It was just on the timing.
One day.
Well, that's part of the problem with automation.
Yeah.
You know, you can't assume that things are going to be instantaneous.
It's not fast enough.
It's not, you're right, instant gratification.
It needs to be ludicrous.
Ludicrous speed.
Well, like I say, we got to kick people back to the old days when you did dial-up modems. You want to put them back to reality? Take it right back to there.
I can't tell you how excited I was when I got my first 14.4K modem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How fast it was.
Yeah.
You know, I'd gone from 300 to 1200 to 14.4.
Oh, see, I went to...
Yep. I had a 96 at one point and...
56K was, I think, what they maxed out as.
And then I got one of those.
And then
that was for the frog pond.
Yeah, and then we went from 56K to 10 meg with Roadrunner.
Yeah, I think I went from my 300 up to a 14.4.
Yeah.
Because the PC Junior had the 300 built into it. Had an internal modem, and that was 300. And then, the story which I've told for decades about Lori coming to the hallway and saying, we got to do something about the internet. And I go, okay, I'll get a faster modem because our phone bill was bigger than our house payment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's your story of getting the network connection.
Oh.
I have rarely heard you swear, but when I answered the phone that next morning, you said some things.
And I said it to my wake-up service, too.
I bet you did.
Back then, my late wife and I used to have a wake-up service because she was terrible about waking up. She could have three, or before I met her, she used to have like three or four clocks around the house. And they go off until where finally she'd have to get up. And finally, like the fifth one would wake her up. And she finally, after almost burning down the condo one time, decided to get the wake-up service. And when you can greet them in the morning and say, yeah, I don't need the next call. I'm all set. You sure? Yeah.
Yeah. I remember reading
then
about
I called Nick.
Yeah. Remember reading about an alarm clock that looked kind of like a baseball. And you had to throw it against the wall very hard for the alarm to stop going off.
There's another one that's a target, and you use a laser gun to shoot it. And until you're awake enough to actually hit it.
I heard on a podcast the other day, Andy Anatko, Big Mac commentator, he wrote a script for his alarm clock that makes him do math.
Oh, nice.
And he has to do it right before the alarm goes off to make sure he's awake enough.
No, this would be Dan. Okay. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
I'm trying to copy some files off of an external drive.
Yep.
That's formatted for Windows. And I'm running into a problem where it says you don't currently have permissions to access this folder. And I'm trying to copy the owner's folder. That's a user's owner's folder.
This is a Windows machine now.
It is.
Okay.
It sort of goes back to where those files were created from, and they're owned by that person.
Right.
And so Windows is trying to enforce security to prevent someone else from copying them.
Right.
The trick is you change the ownership so it thinks you own them, and then it will let you do it.
And the way you do that is you must be logged in as the admin.
Yes, I am.
Okay, when you do that, this is a access denied or can't change or whatever. So what you do is...
I'm posting a link, too.
Oh, good. What you do is you right-click on the file. You're on Windows 10?
Yes.
Okay, on Windows 10, I think you just right click on the folder and then
properties.
Click properties and then click the security tab. It might be advanced, but I think it's security.
I think security then advanced.
Oh, maybe. And then change. And then from there, you're prompted for the administrator password, which you then enter again. And that provides confirmation. Then you type the name of the person you want to give ownership to. In this case, the administrator, I suspect. Then click check names.
It verifies that name is a valid
legal
administrator.
Yeah. Right. And then you click OK. And before you click OK, you can select replace owner on subcontainers and objects. And that takes all the folders underneath it as well.
Yes, and I've done that.
Okay.
And I still have a permission error.
On all the files or on just a few?
All of them.
This I do not know.
Yeah, that's weird.
And when you go back into properties, it shows that you are now the owner of the file?
I can see allow full control, and now I didn't check the thing that says enable inheritance.
There you go. So you may have checked, you may have copied one file, and then it said, I'm sorry, it's all you can have.
Not to inherit that permission down the rest of the folders.
Right, because it won't. So you may have copied the one folder you actually had clicked on.
But not the contents of
it. Any of the subfolders.
Not the contents and none of the subfolders.
Well, there's a checkbox that I did check that says replace all child object permission entities with inheritable permission.
Are you actually changing the owner of the file, or are you trying to add someone else to permission for the file?
Well, I'm trying to change the owner so that I can copy these files onto another drive.
You may not have changed the owner to your current administrator then.
Okay, I am an administrator on this computer.
And
yeah, but yeah, no, what? There's a difference between being an administrator and being the administrator.
Okay.
Microsoft does make that distinction. Just because you're allowed to administrate doesn't necessarily, in this particular instance,
mean
you're the administrator. So you need to log in as the admin. Or when you get to that step that says pick, you know, the username and password that you want to change it to, you pick the administrator. And then you would have to finish all your work as the administrator.
There's also a possible second step I'm finding in the Microsoft note I found that you may have to turn off user access control so that it stops trying to warn you that someone's trying to make changes to the computer.
Right.
Because you want it to make those changes on the computer. So I posted a link from Microsoft on how to change the owner. You can see if that helps.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate the help.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Step three is make a new administrator and use that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a problem.
There's double-edged sword.
There's an interesting checkbox on the Mac that says ignore all ownership on this volume.
Oh, that's lovely.
So you can copy all the files off of a drive you have.
Right. But yeah, on the one hand, it's great that we have so many security features now. On the other hand, because people are just simply not making any stinking backups.
And I'm the only user of my computer. Why does it have permissions?
Right.
Because you might have someone else.
Right. Because people don't do backups.
Because then the bad guys can get in and do anything they want, too.
Right. So you really need to worry about those kinds of things. Look, there's... How do I put this politely? There's no reason not to do backups. There really isn't, except if you're lazy. Backups are simple. You get yourself some sort of extra medium, whether it's a big thumb drive, which would cost a 512 gig, half a terabyte thumb drive, is $50. Come on.
Well, it depends on how important their data is to them.
Well, apparently it's not important until they don't have it anymore.
Right, they don't even think.
And then they learn very quickly.
It'll never happen to me. I'm never going to lose a folder. Why do computers break? We hear that all the time. Why did it break?
I used to always say, why do light bulbs burn out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why did you trip on the carpet, you know?
Right.
They're electronics. They're going to fail.
Everything breaks.
Yeah. Entropy always wins, people.
Yeah.
And so you need to do backups. That's why I've been pushing pCloud. A one-time $175 payment, and you never have to think about backing up again. Never, ever, ever. Spend the money. Do the backups. Have it available to you.
One thing I always noticed, you know, with folks in the years that I was doing computer repair, the documents and all that stuff, yeah, granted, it might be a pain in the butt to recreate those because you had hours and, you know, especially if you were doing papers and everything else. The key thing that is going to cut you down faster than anything and regret not backing up is losing some important photos.
That's right.
Photos you can't go back in time and recreate those. Once they are erased and gone, they're gone, folks. So those are memories that you can't get back. It's not like the document that, you know, oh, well, I can rewrite my resume, no big deal. It's going to be a pain in the butt. Yeah. But, you know, those pictures of, say, your kids when they were growing up and ones that you really cherish, if you don't back them up and something happens to the machine, which it will, no doubt that it will, and they're gone, and then you bring it to a shop and say, hey, get them back. And they have to tell you, well, we meant to.
My wife's family met in Buffalo. They came from San Diego and Austin, Texas, and Florida and Kentucky. They all met there. And one of the people had boxes and boxes of pictures and digitized a bunch of them. Not all of them, because there's just a million of them. But digitized them and brought them. And there was laughter, there was tears, there was joy. And if that person had not digitized those, they would eventually be lost forever.
Yeah. And a lot of times you bring them to those family reunion parties so people can name who was that again? Exactly. Oh, that was great Aunt Phil's friend over there.
And so I took, the largest thumb drive I had was 64 gig. I took a 64 gig thumb drive and took 64 gigs worth of pictures and stuck them up on Google Photos and then shared them with everybody. So now they will always
be there for them.
Be there. And it in my case, it cost me nothing because I have a Pixel phone. But even at, you know, $2 a month, how much money is that a year? Nothing. It's $100 a year. Get over it. You know, it's nonsense. Spend the few bucks and make sure that you have those memories forever. And then you never have to regret that you didn't do a backup. All right, we are done for another week. That music tells us that, wow, you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. Go, you're free. Go out and enjoy the muggy, hot, oppressive weather.
Hazy and humid.
Hazy and humid. But before you go out, vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank myself. I'm Nick Francesco. And I want to thank all of you. It's you people who make this show what it is. So thank you, each and every one of you. We're done for another week, but we will be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?